This is Frequencies Podcast, Episode 4, Straight Out of Boston. My name is Michael J. Johnson. I'm your host. Thanks for listening. My website, michaeljjohnsonmusic.com. I'm posting the show notes in my blog, so you'll see a blog entry for each episode. And you can even leave a comment there if you'd like. You can find me at Twitter, at Mike J. Johnson, soundcloud.com/MichaelJJohnson. We're going to talk about a few things today. I'm going to do a little bit of a review of Straight Outta Compton, the NWA biopic that just came out. You know, I read somewhere that this seems to be sort of a golden age of new sci-fi on TV. And I'm starting to feel like it kind of is, you know. A lot of these television sci-fi series that have come out lately, and we had a whole rash of them this summer, seem to be completely original ideas. I talked about a few of them. Another one that I didn't really talk about yet, but it's kind of an interesting one that you might check out. It's on Hulu, and that is The Whispers. Interesting story about alien invaders who only speak to and through children. Very creepy. I really like the theme, too. It's a very creepy nursery rhyme sort of theme that ends up sounding pretty menacing at the end. Another episode of Mr. Robot with another big shocking twist happened this week. I think there's one left, and then we're done with season one. It's already been renewed for season two. The premiere of Fear the Walking Dead. It's about a little longer than an hour premiere. Moves pretty slowly, but I would say it kind of has to. You're getting in this episode what we didn't really see at all, either in the Walking Dead comic or in the series, and that's what it looked like when this all started. If you think about the comic and the series, it shows Rick going into a coma, and then all this stuff happens while he's in a coma, and then he comes out of the coma, and the zombie apocalypse is already in full swing. So this is a chance for them to tell some other stories, and we're going to see this whole thing unfold in a very large population center, LA. So I thought it was interesting. I'm going to give this series a try. I think it's nice to see another set of stories from this same world. So Straight Outta Compton. This film has already surprised a lot of people. It's in its second week at the top of the box office. It's already done over $100 million at this point. Like I said, second week, it just finished its second weekend. And I liked it. Now, you know, let's remember that these biopics, they always change around some of the stuff. There's a couple characters that don't even show up. For instance, Arabian Prince, who was an original member of NWA, never even shows up in this film. So they changed some stuff around. You got Paul Giamatti again playing a sleazy music industry guy. That poor guy's going to start getting all these gigs pretty soon, but he's great. Ice Cube's son, O'Shea Jackson, playing Ice Cube. He looks a lot like Ice Cube. And Corey Hawkins, the guy who plays Dre, looks enough like Dre, I think. You know, not everybody looks as much like the original person, but I think the casting was spot on in this. The guy who plays Tupac looks exactly like him. Yeah, good film, pretty violent, a lot of sex. One of the complaints, of course, has been that they don't really talk about Dre's violence towards women. And he's actually come out and discussed that pretty recently and expressed his apologies for doing that, but you know, it's not a surprise since Dr. Dre and Ice Cube are executive producers of this film that they wouldn't really include that. What the film does talk about, I think it's very timely in the face of recent events in the last year because they really highlight the problems with racial profiling by police and things like that. And it's kind of sad to see that not a lot has changed. As I said, it's a timely film. I think what we're going to see from this, you know, Hollywood's going to see this, the great success this has had, and we're going to start seeing probably a lot of biopics about hip-hop artists and things like that. I think it's still mostly going to be male-dominated. I doubt that we're going to see a Queen Latifah biopic anytime soon, but I could be wrong. I hope the next one is a Public Enemy biopic, personally, but that's just me. So, if you haven't seen this film, I'd recommend it. I think it's worth seeing. It's near the end of August, And as I said last week, things have been a little bit slow up until a couple of days ago, and then things just kind of blew up. One thing that some of you who follow me on Twitter or Facebook have heard me talk about before is the plight of the musical artist in this modern day when people feel like they are entitled to free music. And really, free media of many kinds. So we've seen some interesting things come out in the last couple of days. There was a guy did a New York Times thing. The guy also shares my last name, but we are not related. And from the sound of it, he's not a musician. In fact, it sounds to me like he's another one of these digital utopians. The digital utopians would like you to believe that everything about modern technology is great for everybody. And they want to tell you that even though artists can't sell their music anymore, it's okay because they can make up that money in other ways. And I don't know. I mean, there may be some truth to this for some people, but not for everybody. And this guy threw around a lot of facts and figures, and from some of the experts that I've been following ever since that article, he's been playing pretty fast and loose with the facts. You know, when you talk about a burgeoning concert industry, he's not really mentioning the fact that now some of these concerts at the high end, it's not unusual for someone to pay $600 a ticket. So if you're taking all the numbers of the concert industry, of course they're going to be bigger now. Actually, I saw another article that spelled it out in one way. They are talking about the 1% of artists who, you know, the people like the Rolling Stones and McCartney and the Eagles and, you know, people who can still command huge ticket prices. The 99% are having trouble even making anything on a concert. Now, I know some areas of the country are different. In the Northeast, where I live, if you are an original band, it's basically a pay-for-play situation. You're lucky if you can come out of a gig with maybe $20 for the whole band. And that's not sustainable. And even if you look at cover bands, you know, here I am 30 years later than I started playing covers. And if I do a cover band gig, I'm lucky if I make per night what I made 25 years ago or 30 years ago. In fact, a lot of times it's even less. So you can't really tell me that the concert business is where people are going to make up for it. And the people I know who go out on tours, who aren't huge stars, they end up paying out of pocket. They never make a profit on these concerts. In fact, it costs them money most of the time to go out on tour. So what are musicians supposed to do? A lot of people are just thinking about the artists. What about the songwriters? If you're a songwriter who doesn't perform and it's getting very hard to make any money off of royalties anymore, how are you supposed to make a living? If you are a recording engineer, or if you are, you know, even a live sound engineer, but anyone who's in sort of a support position for musicians, all of this is going to trickle down to them and it's going to end up taking money out of their pocket. So let's just talk through a few of the arguments that I tend to see online, especially. One of the arguments is, well, you know, the way that the modern music industry works hasn't really been around that long. And yeah, true. It's been around, you know, 100 years, a little more than 100 years. So what was before that? Well, before that, you had patronage. And before that, musicians were employed by the church. So if you think about it, and really, this has been happening since the Middle Ages. In terms of musicians being employed by the church, you know, we're talking probably close to 1,000 years ago that started. So for 1,000 years, musicians have had at least some way to make a living. And think about all of the stuff that's grown around that. I mean, you have all of these universities and colleges around the country that have music programs. So what are you going to tell a music major? You know, what are they going to school for now? If suddenly the rug is pulled out from under them and they are now expected to give away everything that they have studied, trained for years for free. This is where the real disconnect on this is to me. If somebody finds out that they have a gift for something and they want to train to become better at it, and we live in this capitalist democracy, and so in a capitalist democracy, as far as I'm concerned, we should get paid for whatever we've trained to do. It's like, well, we're capitalists, but you artists, you have to practice communism. You know, we're all entitled to the fruits of your labors and all your hard work for free. Argument number two, too late, can't put the toothpaste back in the tube, streaming is happening, nothing you can do about it. Sure, but now let me ask you this, what happened if all of the music creators just suddenly said, we're no longer going to allow streaming services to have our music? What would Pandora do without music? Argument number three, the record companies brought this on themselves and they deserve it, which I agree with. Except, guess who's making money off of Spotify? The record labels. They're just about the only people. The record labels, the major record labels, are about the only people who are making any money off of Spotify. I think they're even making more money than Spotify themselves. And they are not sharing that money with the artists. Our little revolution, and I believed in it too for a while, our little revolution failed. Because all we did was take more out of the artist's pockets, and the end user is now expecting everything for free, and the labels are still making money off of ad revenue and stuff like that. So they're still getting their piece of the pie, and the real losers are the artists. The problem is the music should be free idea. The Google apologists, the group of libertarians, which really surprises me, it seems incongruous to me, who don't believe in the idea of intellectual property, and they marginalize an entire class of people who are marginalized only because their chosen profession happens to be something that in many ways does not produce a physical product. Now, by the way, tech people, they're coming for you next. I mean, it's already happening. Software. Nobody wants to pay for software anymore. Apps have made it even worse. So the fact that you guys didn't stand with us, you're going to be sorry about that. That's just my prediction, though. But the music should be free thing. I remember when I was teaching at that small college in the Midwest, and this probably was around 2005, I'm walking down the hall of the music school, and I see a box of records sitting there and a big sign on it that says, music should be free. Now, even back then, I thought, what? I knew this probably wasn't a music major, because who's going to pay 30 grand a year to get their music degree and say music should be free? But if it was a music major, there was some sort of disconnect there. This is why I talk about this so much. For me, it doesn't matter. I've got a teaching gig. I can still play some on the side and make some extra money, but I don't have to rely on it for my living. But what about all of my students? Every year, a bunch of them graduate with this expensive degree in hand, and I just worry about what they're going to do. And why should they have to suffer for the fact that they have this passion for music? And for hundreds of years, people with a passion for music could go through a school and train to be better musicians and at least have a reasonable expectation to make a living at it. That's all I'm going to say about this right now, but I'll probably keep talking about it some. I have so much to say about it, and I'm sure I'll get trolled. I remember when I did an op-ed a couple years ago for the Boston Globe. Another Berkeley professor trolled me via email about it. So I know I'll get trolled about this, but I feel like I just have to stand up for my people, for my tribe, and that's what I'm doing. So thanks for listening. Please help me get the word out. Let's get some more people checking out this podcast, and then I'll try to start bringing in some interesting guests and things like that. Thanks again. See you next week.